You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello everyone, a warm welcome along to the latest edition of the Football Writers Association podcast here in association with William Hill. Good to have you with us. Dave Kellner in the studio and joined on the line now by the chief football correspondent for the Daily Telegraph, Jason Burt, is live on the line. First of all, a warm welcome. Good afternoon to you, Jason.
Good afternoon, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed. You've just returned from Spain, where you were watching high-class European football, Jason.
Yeah, it can be quite a sobering thought, actually, because I've seen all the Champions League quarter-finalists in the last couple of weeks, and I was in Spain this week to watch Real Madrid play Bayern Munich, and then I went down to Barcelona to see Barcelona play Juventus, and coming away from the Nou Camp on Wednesday night, it was a 0-0 draw and a fantastic defensive performance from Juventus. And you know, I know it's an old chestnut, but you kind of look at it and think, you know, the Premier League clubs, it's all very exciting, there's some fantastic teams, you know, really huge entertainment and everything, but there is a gulf. There's definitely a gulf in quality between those top European sides and the Premier League teams. I can't imagine a Premier League team having gone to the Nou Camp the way Juventus did and sort of defend as well, but also attack against Barcelona. You know, I was there when Manchester City played them earlier this season. There is a big gulf. It's a sobering thought, really, to be honest with you, because we all love the Premier League and we want Premier League teams to do well. And it wasn't so long ago when we had three semi-finalists in the Premier League, and Leicester City did fantastically well this season. But even then, I was in Madrid for the Atletico Madrid game against Leicester, and it was a 1-0 battering, basically. I don't want to sort of be too downbeat about it, because there were some fantastic games, and I was very privileged to be out there and watching these matches. But you do sometimes think there is quite a big gulf between those top European teams and the Premier League clubs.
The draw has just been made for the Champions League semi-finals, yeah. And we're going to see Atletico Madrid versus Real Madrid and Monaco versus Juventus. So I think it's the way I would like it as well, Jason, with something other than a Madrid derby in the final if it happened like that.
Exactly, because otherwise we'd have had that, three out of four seasons, which wouldn't have been great. I mean, again, I was at those finals, and again, Atletico Madrid were incredibly unlucky to lose out to Real Madrid. I actually fancy them over two legs. I really do. I think that's not a good draw for Real Madrid. I think over two legs, I think Atletico may be able to negotiate their way through. I thought Bayern Munich were the better team when I watched them play against Real Madrid. And Real Madrid were sort of lucky, obviously, but Bayern Munich had a player sent off in each game. And when Vidal got sent off on Tuesday, I think that changed the game, really. I think Real Madrid had the extra man and made it count. And obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo came alive, albeit with two offside goals. I think the Monaco-Juventus tie is fascinating as well, because actually I think that's the worst team for Monaco to play, Juventus, because not only can they defend really well, but they're very, very dangerous. And as exciting as this Monaco side is, and I'd love them to get through to the final, because it's such a young, exciting team, scoring lots. Kylian Mbappe has been an absolute revelation this season, but there's five or six players in that team who any Premier League side, any European side would want. And I know scouts have been at Monaco all season watching these players, and they're getting more and more expensive when the summer transfer market opens. And I think Monaco will do well to hold on to more than two or three of them, frankly. I think three or four could go. But I think that's a very difficult draw for them, because over the two legs, I think Juventus will probably prove to be too strong for them, because they're not just a team that defends extremely well, but they can score goals. You know, Higuain and obviously Diabala. So, but I think it's a fantastic draw. I'm with you. I want to avoid a Real Madrid Atletico Madrid final. I think that wouldn't have been... It would have been a great game, but it wouldn't have been... We've sort of seen that one before, haven't we, really? So it wouldn't have been one that we necessarily want to have again for the final in Cardiff. But it's a good draw.
Juventus are 13-8 joint favourites here to win the Champions League alongside Real Madrid. Atletico Madrid are 4-1, which could look a spot of value. And Monaco, the outsiders, at 7-1. Just before we get your gut feeling on who's going to win the Champions League this season, quick word on Real versus Bayern, because you mentioned you were at the match midweek. I mean, the debate about video chaos. Technology after that match was heated. Where do you stand? Should we be looking at video replays for big decisions?
I think so. I think it's long overdue. Carlo Ancelotti is the calmest man I've ever met in football, but he was angry on Tuesday night. That's the most angry I've ever seen him, actually. I think his eyebrow was twitching away non-stop after the game, and he went as far as he's ever gone in criticising match officials. And I think it was such a clear-cut case in terms of yet again seeing in a big game. We get, actually, bizarrely, in the Bernabeu, we don't get replays. The press box there doesn't have any monitors.
Right.
But I was getting messages back from the UK saying that's not a goal, that's offside, that's not a red. So that was within seconds. So, you know, and I think we have so much scrutiny. There's so many cameras, so many camera angles. I think, you know, if you think about it, only a couple of years ago, people were umming and ahhing about goal line technology, and now we just think it's a complete no-brainer. I think it will be the same with video assistant refereeing. In a couple of years' time, we'll all be wondering why we just didn't have this earlier, because, okay, there are still marginal decisions and there are still decisions which people argue over. There's been red cards recently where, I mean, the great example actually in the last week was the penalty incident involving Leroy Sané and Fraser Foster, the Southampton-Manchester City game, where even after replay after replay after replay, people were arguing as to whether or not Foster got a fingertip to the ball or not. Now, there will always be cases like that, and maybe even then there won't be the perfect solution in terms of the right decision being made. But we will get more decisions right with video assistant refereeing. We will get more decisions right. And the technology is there to happen quickly. And I think the great example recently was we had the France game where France played Spain, I think it was, in the friendly. And you could see, actually, what also happened was the players don't harangue the referee because they know the referee is referring it to a video assistant referee. So it's taking it away from the referee. So what we had, again, on Tuesday and on Wednesday night in Barcelona, which I thought was the behaviour of some of the Barcelona players was pretty poor, actually, the way they tried to crowd round and pressurise the referee. You're backing the referee up a bit more, giving him more support. He's able to refer it to somebody else, and the players will accept the decision because it's not just the referee making that decision. So you're giving the referee more power. You're giving the referee more information. I think the worst scenario is where you have a situation where a bad decision is made on the field in the first half. The referee is going off and he's finding out that he's made a terrible decision because he does find out, and it's influencing the way he officiates the second half. And also we're all looking at him thinking, this guy's made a mistake. This guy's, you know, out there, you know, in a situation where he's been hung out to dry, frankly. And it's very uncomfortable. And then you get journalists like myself, you get the pundit. I try not to criticise referees. I find it quite unsavoury. But you get a lot of pundits who pile in very, very critical. Actually, the worst people in the world are the former referees who've all got columns, including in my newspaper, and they're very critical of each other. I think it just becomes very personal, and I think these guys almost get hung out to dry. And also the managers blame them, they blame the referee. You know, they have their instant excuses when the referee's to blame. He didn't have a good game. The referee could have done better. The referee was too young. We saw it even last week with Mourinho when he was complaining again about the refereeing during the FA Cup tie with Manchester United and Chelsea earlier this season, damning Michael Oliver with faint praise, saying he's a young referee, promising referee. But we know exactly what he's talking about. He's basically saying, you know, he's too young, he's too inexperienced, he messed up in his eyes. So I think that needs to stop. But I think we will find it will happen quite quickly now. I know, obviously, we're going to get it next season in the FA Cup. And then the season after that, I think we'll get it in the Premier League. And then when that all happens, we'll all be wondering, why didn't we have this all happen sooner?
I think if you've got an incident as well where it is 50-50 and half the people agree, half the people disagree, you've got to use what the NFL do now, Jason, is the call on the field stands, basically. So if there's not irrefutable evidence, they stick with the referee's original decision.
And exactly that's what should happen as well, because there will be some decisions, as I say, that Fraser Foster one, even after replay, after replay, after replay, I think it was Graham Poll was saying it's still a penalty. And other people were saying, of course it's not a penalty because he got a fingertip to the ball. But you're absolutely right. That in that instance, it has to be the on-field call by the referee. And, you know, okay, we'll still argue about it afterwards, but we're going to get more decisions right. That's what's going to happen. We're going to get more decisions right. And there is so much TV coverage of football that we're seeing everything so quickly that it's just not fair anymore. It's actually not fair on the referees. And I think they want it. So if they want it, it's not as if they're against it. They want it, so it should happen.
Do you think it will slow the flow of the game down? That's one of the big arguments.
I think there's a danger of that. And actually, I've seen it. When I've seen it go badly wrong, I think, is sometimes in rugby. You know, I think it just seems to take forever on occasion. I think some of the decisions in the Rugby World Cup recently was would just seem to take forever. But I think in that France game recently, it wasn't too bad. I think there was it took a while, but I think it all speed up. And I think we're seeing it quite quickly anyway in when we see the replays ourselves. They're going to have to make sure they get the decisions right. It is the one concern, isn't it? It is the one concern that it will slow down the flow of the game. But I just don't feel... And I think the criteria they're going to put on it are quite clear. It's not going to be every incident. And I definitely don't think we should have this idea that some people are saying the managers have calls. You know, the managers like almost like kind of call for a referral. No way, because they'll make tactical calls, won't they? And they'll do things like that. I think it's got to be down to the match official in instances which are game-changing, red cards, penalties, things like that. Key offside. These are the things that need to be looked at. There will be quite a few per game. And actually, it probably happened more often than we think. But you're absolutely right. That is the one concern if it slows it down. But I just feel that technology is going to be there to make it not such a problem.
You've seen all four Champions League semi-finalists then live this season, Jason. Which one's going to lift the trophy?
Now, I don't want to be too sort of smart here and say, you know, aren't I great. But I predicted a Juventus-Real Madrid final.
Really?
At the start of the season. Yeah, I just had a funny feeling Real Madrid would get back through. And I think they might, at that stage, I was thinking they might win it. My favourites now are Juventus. Having seen all the teams, I think Atletico Madrid are incredibly hard to beat, are fantastically well organised, have absolute mental toughness, not quite the quality that Juventus have got. And I think Juventus and that display at the Nou Camp was extraordinary, really. So they, you know, Barcelona played well. They threw the kitchen sink at them. Okay, Messi missed a couple of chances, but Juventus were never in trouble at the Nou Camp, and it was extraordinary performance. I think Atletico can't be written off, and neither can Real Madrid because of their firepower. And then you've got Monaco with all the goals they can score, but I just feel this might be too far for them now. I think they're not strong enough defensively. I think they'll get picked apart by Juventus. So I did actually think Real Madrid would make it through. I have this kind of funny feeling Gareth Bale, Cardiff, you know, going back to all that. But I think that's the romantic side of it. I look at it now and think of those four teams, the best team for me is Juventus. Now, we could have a Juventus-Atletico Madrid final, which might be one for the hipsters rather than for the football purists in terms of goals. That I don't think there'd be an awful lot of goals in that game. It'd be a great game of football, but it might not be the spectacle we want for a final in the Champions League. I think at the moment I might actually go towards that as the final. I think on Madrid Juventus.
Yeah, Juventus 13-8 then to win the Champions League this season. Let's talk about this weekend because we've got two big FA Cup ties at Wembley, both semi-final encounters, and Chelsea versus Spurs is first up. That's tomorrow afternoon at 5:15, and Chelsea are 7-4 to win the game. The draw 21-10 with Spurs. 9-5, so very little separating these two sides as far as the betting is concerned, and Spurs finishing the season very, very strongly as well, Jason. They've won the last eight games in all competitions. Chelsea just wobbling ever so slightly. That performance against Manchester United at Old Trafford was way below what we've seen for the majority of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I was there for the game, and it was a strange performance from Chelsea. What seems to have happened after that is stories have come out that there was illness in the camp. You know, obviously Marco Alonso couldn't play in the game, had to be withdrawn in the warm-up. And it seems subsequent to that, Diego Costa, Gary Cahill, a few other players weren't at 100%. But even so, it was an incredibly flat performance by them. Not just flat, but also tactically outthought. You know, Jose Mourinho did a number on them very well. You know, Ander Herrera sat on Eden Hazard. And it actually... As great a player as Hazard is, I was disappointed with him last Sunday because I thought, you know, you're being man-marked, what are you going to do? Mm. And he didn't have an answer. And actually, Herrera had more involvement in terms of actually affecting the game positively. You know, he scored a goal and he got an assist. So he didn't just man-mark Eden Hazard. He actually, you know, had a positive contribution in terms of winning the game for Manchester United. So I thought he was outstanding for United. Now, what will be interesting will other teams now try and look at how Manchester United stopped Chelsea in the way that Tottenham stopped Chelsea earlier this season with slightly different tactics. So Chelsea, as good as they've been, as brilliant as they've been, they are not infallible, you know, and I think that's the situation. We've also got 12 or 13 players there that Antonio Conte clearly trusts. Beyond that, they haven't got an awful lot that you really want to turn to. I think it's fascinating. You know, I think this semi-final, you know, psychologically is a huge thing as well as not just getting through to the FA Cup final, because if Tottenham can beat Chelsea, there has to be seeds of doubt, because then they go into the midweek fixtures. Chelsea are at home to Southampton. Now, that's a game you would expect them to win, but Southampton are not a bad side. They can't. They won there at Stamford Bridge last season. If Chelsea go into that game having lost to Manchester United, having lost the FA Cup semi-final, there'd be a huge amount of pressure. A huge amount of pressure. If they don't win that game against Southampton, then you've got Tottenham against Crystal Palace the next night. I'm sorry, Crystal Palace against Tottenham the next night. Again, a very, very hard game. But imagine how Tottenham will feel having beaten Chelsea in the semi-final and then Chelsea playing Southampton and maybe not getting 3 points there. I mean, that's a lot of maybes and ifs and buts, but you know, I just think there's an awful lot riding on this semi-final now. Antonio Conte, after the game at Old Trafford, said that Spurs are the best team at the moment, and they are. He's telling the truth. Now, that's partly to sort of sharpen the minds of people at Chelsea that this is a fight now. It's a game on, isn't it? It's down to 4 points. We've got 6 games to go. You think Chelsea have got enough to get over the line. They haven't got the hardest run in, but at this stage of the season, it's not about necessarily who you play. And Tottenham are formidable at home. Now, they've got Arsenal and Manchester United at home, but you'd still back them to beat those two teams at White Hart Lane. So I think Tottenham will get a lot of points from now to the end of the season. It's a question of whether or not Chelsea can get enough points. I think they will. But as I say, you know, whoever loses this game on Saturday, I think there'll be a big psychological blow to them. And I think it'll be a big advantage to the other team. Don't get too carried away. I think Chelsea will still win the league. But I think at last we've got a title race.
We have. It's a shame from a neutral's perspective that Chelsea have got what looks like such an easy run in. I know you mentioned Southampton coming up, but it does look comfortable apart from that.
It does, but Everton away is a very, very tough game. I think Everton have beaten them, is it 5 of the last 7 times at Goodison Park or something? No, that's a big game. I really think that'll be a tough match. And, so they beat Southampton, say Palace, say Spurs beat Palace, it's still 4 points. Everton away is a tough game. They've got to get something out of that game. And then if they don't get something out of that game, it's going to be tough. I think the danger might be that the Spurs will probably run out of games. You know, it may be, if we were looking at this saying there's, 10 games to go, you think, right, okay, this really is on. 6 games to go, they may run out of games. And as you say, they have got a more difficult run. And I just feel sometimes at this stage of the season, it doesn't really almost matter who you play. You know, I think we've seen teams often slip up in games you don't expect them to slip up in. I think it's more about belief and momentum and whether or not you can handle the pressure. Now, I think Chelsea will handle the pressure. This group of players have won the league before. Antonio Conte has won the league before, obviously with Juventus several times. Although there is one fascinating incident when he was a player when he lost the league. Juventus lost the league. They slipped up very, very badly and lost the league to Lazio when he was a player. And he still speaks about that. He said he didn't sleep for a week. And everyone laughed. And he went, no, I didn't sleep for a week. And I believe in, you know, the character he is, the sort of intense character. Now, that spurred him on to win other leagues and so on as a player and a coach. But you just wonder, is there a little seed of doubt in his mind? It's his first season in English football. He's always said, to be fair to him, you know, we've got carried away with Chelsea. He hasn't. You know, everyone would say how fantastic Chelsea were. He said, well, you know, we've done well. Interestingly, he's always wanted more players. He's put a lot of pressure on Chelsea to try and sign other players. He didn't get who he wanted last summer in the transfer market. He's trying very, very hard to get 5 or 6 players this summer to bolster the squad. Obviously, Lukaku is one of his key targets. You know, Alexis Sanchez. So, Key players, big players. So he obviously thinks the squad isn't quite strong enough. Now, there are also players there like Diego Costa who we think wants to go. Now, is he playing as well as he can do at the moment? He's not. You know, he's not had a good second half of the season. So it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. I think Chelsea will get through, as I keep saying, but, you know, I think this game on Saturday psychologically means an awful lot to both teams. And I could see if Spurs get through this game, if they win, if they beat Chelsea, wow, the belief will really start soaring.
Just before we get your prediction on Chelsea versus Spurs, quick word on this game being played at Wembley, because a lot of column inches will be devoted to Tottenham and their misadventure in Europe, having played at Wembley and underperformed at Wembley as well. Is there anything in that, in your opinion, Jason?
I mean, I find it hard to believe, but I think probably, yeah, there is, actually. You know, I think because teams, I mean, Arsenal had the same situation, and I remember I've covered the Tottenham games at Wembley, and going to the first game, I think, which was against Monaco. You went to the game and the atmosphere was good, the crowd was good, the stadium was full. It looked like, you know, they branded it. It looked like a Tottenham home game. But the players just didn't play. They just didn't play the same way. Maybe it was size of the pitch or the environment or something. We just seemed intimidated. And the danger always is with those games in particular, I think the opposition raised themselves even more. They really enjoyed it. You know, Bayer Leverkusen had the same sort of situation when they were there. And I think those teams really go to a stadium like Wembley and think, wow, we might never play here again, you know, some of these players. So I guess on Saturday, it's a neutral venue. You know, that's the slight danger, the slight difference there. It's actually neutral for both these teams. So it might won't feel psychologically the same for Tottenham. It's not their home game. They don't have the pressure of playing this home game at Wembley with this full stadium and all these people and the expectation. But it's a strange, it's very strange how it does seem to affect teams. You know, instinctively, you think it won't. I mean, in a slightly different way, the Olympic Stadium with West Ham, I remember speaking to people at the start of the season, and spatially, it feels different than your usual home, you know, obviously from Upton Park or Whitehall Lane. It feels different. It doesn't feel quite like your ground. It feels big. It doesn't feel the same sort of environment, the same sort of atmosphere. But again, you'd think the players would get over that. You know, you would have thought, it's not. Can it really be that big a factor? Certainly away teams, when they go there, you know, they do raise their game. But you'd expect Tottenham to raise the game as well. So I think, again, psychologically, if they can win on Saturday, winning at Wembley, the record of Tottenham's record at Wembley isn't great anyway, but winning at Wembley would be quite a big thing for them.
What's your prediction then, Jason?
Having said all that, I'm not sure. I think I have a funny feeling Tottenham will do it, actually. I just feel there's a sense of momentum around them. The players are fit, apart from Danny Rose, Harry Kane, Dele Alli. I look at them and man for man, I think they've just got enough. I think they've got enough to sort of win this game. I think they beat Chelsea and beat them well in the league earlier this season, again, at Whitehall Lane. And actually, they were quite unlucky at Stamford Bridge. So I have a funny feeling they might do this. And if they do it, next week's fixtures are going to be fascinating. You know, how both these two teams cope in the Premier League after an FA Cup semi-final, which... It's Chelsea lose. I mean, you know, this is an experienced group of players, experienced manager, but there will be a lot of pressure on them.
Even money. Spurs to qualify for the final on Saturday evening. Spurs to win that game in 90 minutes, available at 9-5. And if you're looking for goal scorers, Harry Kane is 9-2 to score first. Dele Alli, 13-2. Heung-min Son, who's been excellent recently, he's 13-2 to score first. And it's 11-1 for Christian Eriksen. The other semi-final is also at Wembley. It's 3 p.m. Sunday, and Arsenal take on Manchester City. Arsenal 16-5 to win this game. The draw 5-2, and Man City odds on to win in 90 minutes here at 10-11 to qualify for the final. Manchester City 1-2, Arsenal are 6-4, and this has often been a source of respite for Arsene Wenger when he's been heavily critiqued. He's come back and won a trophy, and it's often been the FA Cup. And they've actually won it 12 times now, which is a joint record alongside Manchester United. This is their 29th appearance in the FA Cup semi-finals. But the fans want more than FA Cup success. They want to be challenging for the league and progressing in Europe as well, Jason.
Absolutely, but obviously that's not going to happen this season. And I actually think, bizarrely, I think the FA Cup, winning the FA Cup meant more to Arsene Wenger the last couple of times he won it, especially when he beat Hull a couple of years ago. I think if he hadn't won that game, I think he'd have gone. I think he'd have gone then. I think that was a game he had to win, a final he had to win. I think this one, this semi-final and final, if they get through, I think there's a bigger debate now around, kind of, as you say, they look like they're going to finish outside the top four. Again, another disappointing Champions League campaign. I don't think an FA Cup triumph will gloss over any of that now. I don't think that really matters. I think the debate over Wenger's future, you know, what we're hearing, what we think quite strongly actually is that he will stay. Although there is some negotiations to be done. I think actually, bizarrely, the fact that they've actually had such a terrible run recently has emboldened the board a bit more to ask for change. I think up until recently, they were just going to expect him to sign the contract, and that was it, the two-year extension. I think now they're looking at it and saying, well, actually, we want some changes. We want some changes to the backroom staff, and there's an active debate at the moment about a director of football at Arsenal, which I think Wenger is against, really. I don't think he particularly wants that. So that's quite interesting, you know, in terms of the bigger picture. So these things are much bigger than just this FA Cup semi-final for Arsenal. But, you know, if they can get through, if they can get to a final, if they can win that game, then they, it does, you know, it's something they can try and sell to the supporters. But I just feel with Arsenal fans that it's about more than that now for them. You know, I think this is a big season in terms of not finishing in the top four, in terms of the similar problems again reoccurring. And I think we've reached the moment now where things do have to change. You know, I don't think it's going to be the manager, but I think he's going to have to change things around the club. I think they have to really think about how much longer Wenger will stay. I think this has to be his last contract. Personally, and I obviously don't want anyone to be out of a job, but I think it's long overdue that he went, actually. I think the last couple of years have been stagnant. I think they've gone backwards. I think they've looked soft as a team. They look soft as a club. They look vulnerable. You know, City drew 2-2 at the Emirates recently, and you know, they could have lost that game. But actually, you know, they could have destroyed Arsenal at times, you know, when they went forward. And the City's firepower is amazing. You know, they're an incredibly frustrating team, because I look at them sometimes and think, this team is so good. These players are so good going forward. And then they just do stupid mistakes, give away stupid goals. I think it's a work in progress at City. I think Guardiola's going to have a big, big summer, as is Arsene Wenger. I think both clubs will spend a lot of money. I think Arsenal have to appease the fans. And I think City will to appease the manager, really. Yeah. I think the manager wants change. You know, he wants there's four backs. You can go through the team. There's so many different areas he wants to improve, but certainly defensively. And having invested so much in Guardiola, they have to give him what he wants. You know, he spent an awful lot of money last summer, and they will do the same this summer. And I actually think they're close to being brilliant. I really do. I think, especially going forward, especially when Gabriel Jesus comes back, and I expect them to win the semi-final, and I expect them to go forward into the final. But I think it means more to them, this semi-final, actually, than it does to Arsenal. I think City and Guardiola, this is a very disappointing season for them. You know, they're fighting for the top four. I think they'll just about make it. But imagine if they don't finish in the top four and win nothing. In Pep Guardiola's first season in English football, that's extraordinary. And it could happen. You know, and that's how important I think this game is for them. I think they'll finish in the top four, and I think they'll get through to the FA Cup final. But if they don't, you know, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one for Guardiola, because although we've had some fantastic football from him, that will be failure. You know, that is not what's expected from him. You know, he's expected to do an awful lot more than that. You know, nowadays you don't get transition. You don't get time. You know, you have to hit the ground running. You have to impose your way you play. We see that with top clubs, top managers, and Guardiola, they don't come any better than Guardiola, and it's been a hard season for him. I've got some sympathy because he's tried to change the way they play, and I think people always say to him, I give him an easy time, but I can see what he's trying to do is harder than what some of the other managers are trying to do. Jose Mourinho always gets very angry about it, but he's not trying to fundamentally change the way that his Man United play. He's trying to get them back to where they used to play.
Yeah.
Whereas Man City is changing. So, yeah, I think it's a fascinating semi-final. But I have a funny feeling this one means more to Man City than to Arsenal.
That's a long way off, isn't it, by the way, for Mourinho to get Manchester United to play the way they played under Alex Ferguson? Because,
well, they've got the song. And, you know, Jose's got us playing the way United should. And I'm sitting there listening to this thinking, has he? You know, I don't see the attacking football flair. Alex Ferguson was a curmudgeonly old so-and-so at times, and you know, he's very difficult with the media, but you could never fault the way his team played. And I remember a game in White Hart Lane once. I think it was a game they didn't even have to win. I think it was 0-0. I think a point would have been fine, and he just threw on forwards, and it finished 0-0 actually. And I remember he was wearing a beanie hat, it was pouring with rain, and he took his hat off and he threw it on the ground, and a big broad grin on his face at the end of the game. He thought, fair play, the man's trying to win a football match. Yeah. You know, he's, you know, as difficult as he could be with the media, as bad-tempered, you've got to you can forgive him a lot of his faults because of that. You know, and you know, United classic style of play with the wingers and getting forward. Football's evolving; it's changing. And at times, United, I thought they played well against Chelsea last weekend. But this, to be fair, they've got an awful long way to go to get back to being that sort of style of play. And I think that's a hard job for Jose Mourinho, because it's not instinctively the way he wants to play football. You know, and I think he's done okay this season. I think you can't say any more than okay. And people might say, oh, well, he's going to win the Europa League and he's got the league. But it's about more than that for Manchester United. Europa League has become a get-out for them. It's become, you know, a get-out-of-jail card if they can win the Europa League and get into the Champions League that way. A couple of years ago, Jose Mourinho was sneering about the Europa League, saying it's not a competition I want to play in. And of course it's not, but it might get him out of jail this season.
It might do. Manchester City then, to win comprehensively against Arsenal, or do you see it being tight?
I predicted 3-1. I predicted 3-1, yeah. So I put my neck on the line there. But I'll see a few goals, I think, and I expect them to win.
12-1, Man City to win 3-1. Are you at Wembley this weekend then, Jason?
I'm doing that game, actually. I'm not going to go to the Spurs-Chelsea game. I've done a lot of travelling recently, and I'm going to do the City-Arsenal game on Sunday, which I'm looking forward to. I think it will be a good football match. You know, I think the two teams are far better going forward than defending. So what will be interesting was if Wenger sticks with this three at the back.
Yeah.
You know, he seems to have had this sort of conversion to a system that... I always find it weird, actually. I don't know about you, but I always find it weird how formations suddenly become the vogue. You know, 4-4-2 obviously years ago, 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, and now 3-4-3.
Yeah.
You think? Well, don't managers think of this before? And it's like, well, it's working for them, so we'll try it. You know, you're thinking, well, I kind of find it a bit weird that, I mean, because obviously they know all these formations, but they kind of seem to end up copying each other, which always seems a bit strange to me. But there we go.
Maybe Arsene Wenger's thinking now, something's got to change at Arsenal. like you mentioned earlier, you think they're going to spend big in the summer. Arsenal's fans have been asking Wenger to do that for years.
Yeah.
I just wonder whether he's too stuck in his ways, Arsene Wenger, that he's never been able to change. Maybe this change in formation is showing the fans that he can change.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the big criticisms of Arsene Wenger, as you say, is it's not just that he's stuck in his ways. He just doesn't change anything around the club, you know, the backroom staff. I mean, I remember a few years ago, we were on a Champions League trip, and Arsenal had a good start to the season. Steve Bould had just come in. I think they had a few clean sheets. And we spoke to Arsene Wenger about the influence of Steve Bould, and everyone was expecting him to say, yes, Steve's come in and done a really good job. And he went, well, it's not made any difference, you know. And you think, sometimes you think with him, he doesn't almost, sounds very harsh to say this, but he's a little bit egotistical. He doesn't always want to praise others, you know. And you think, well, actually, a good manager brings in good people around him. Now, again, going back to Ferguson, what Ferguson was very, very good at was refreshing his backroom staff. He had assistant managers change, coaching staff change. He brought in people with new ideas. He had people around him. He realised that he was getting older. Football was changing. And also, you need a different voice. So he became less the training ground manager and more almost the kind of touchline, kind of director of football, just picking the team type thing. He wasn't doing a lot of the tactical stuff. He wasn't doing a lot of the actual coaching. Wenger still does all of that. You know, he does all of that. And I think sometimes when one man has been doing the same thing for the same club, not necessarily the same group of players, but the same club, year after year after year after year, you do get stuck in your ways. You do get stuck in doing things a similar way. And eventually the players have heard it all before. So sometimes you just need to freshen that up a little bit. And I think that's been the problem. You know, he's a great manager. He's got great ideas about football. He's got great principles about football. He's done a fantastic job in building, rebuilding the club and, you know, the stadium, the training ground. Everything is superb. It's absolutely top quality, first class, except for the team.
Yeah.
You know, except for the team. And that's fundamentally the most important thing, is the team. And it's not a top quality side. It's a side which has fundamental flaws to it, and a manager, unfortunately, who has fundamental flaws in the way he's behaving.
Jason, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Enjoy that trip to Wembley. And if you want to follow Jason on Twitter, by the way, @JBurtTelegraph, and you can follow myself @DKellner. Yeah, enjoy Wembley, Jason, and I look forward to speaking to you very, very soon.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.